Okay, and it is 8:00. Time to call the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District Improvements Committee meeting to order for April 7th, 2020. And Amelia, if you could alert all to whoever's on the call, that'd be great.
Alert them.
Yeah, provide us with the, read the list of attendees so we all know who's on.
I will gladly do that. I have 12 people. Chief Werblin, Mr. Clark, Randy Janko, Paul Stevenson, John Merchant, good morning, John. John Q Public, Lori from Coastland Engineering, Mark Martin, Tom Henning. And then I have phone numbers. I have two people that have just joined us via telephone.
Okay.
Welcome.
Welcome all, and Richard Public, good morning. All right, let's start off. We've had the call to order. Any call for a public comment? Hearing.
You can all see my screen?
Right now, no.
It's just the general screen.
Yeah, it's just the general screen.
It's not up.
Okay, let's try this again. Can you see my screen now?
Yes.
Yep.
And it's the packet you can see. It's the right screen too.
Yes.
Awesome.
Great. Oh, and I can, that's good too. Perf. Okay, hearing no comments from the public then, we'll go right into item number three, review monthly updates.
All right, if you could scroll down, Amelia.
How's that?
Excellent. So on the retreats north and east, there's been no work going on in that, so therefore there's no update. On the Rancho Murrieta North development project, the project continues to be on hold, so it's on no work's basically proceeding on that. However, there's been some discussions in regard to RMA's concerns with drainage into the lakes. And so district legal counsel is reviewing that and will be providing back some information to us as well as to the RMA as it results from his review of that, and that would be Mr. Shanahan.
Let me, if I could, Paul, speak to that. So we did receive the letter from Mr. Shanahan yesterday, and so he confirmed basically what you see there in writing.
And that was sent directly to RMA's counsel?
Correct.
Yes, okay. And there's a reference to district drainage plans not allowing for discharge into the reservoirs in your report, Paul. And we just want to make sure that if and when any questions come up about what document does that reference, then we want to make sure we have that available.
Okay, so that was the 2003 master plan, if I believe I'm correct off the top of my head. So
right. Yeah, so it's mm-hmm. it's just when we, if we have that at our fingertips, if it comes up as to what that specific reference is, that will be helpful.
Absolutely. And just for clarification, it's what the 2003 master planning document does say is that the drainage plans do not allow for discharge into the reservoirs.
And I understand that. It's just, you know, being able to actually call up the document and point to that particular reference.
Yep.
If that comes up. Okay. Go ahead and continue.
So at the Murrieta Gardens offsite improvements, project began installing some sign installations. And this is also noted in the few of the other projects like the marketplace, et cetera, but it's it's going to be a standalone item for discussion, that some commercial signs were beginning to be installed, which were discovered by our utility supervisor, Ron Greenfield, while he was out marking underground service alerts, that the project was out there with drilling machines very close to district utilities. And so he gave me a call, and I know Mark had been in contact with John Sullivan in regard to this and had requested that plan sheets be sent over for our review prior to them doing any of this work. And that hadn't happened. So we asked them to not, well, we didn't say not to do anything, but basically that any work that they proceeded on would be at their own risk, and that they'd be liable for any consequences as a result of their work.
Okay. And we have that as a separate item, subsequent to in this meeting agenda. So, okay. Any questions, comments on those so far?
Going a little fast there, Amelia. Yeah. Can you go back up, Amelia?
Go back up to MG lot 4 and 5.
Yep. Lot 4 and 5. There's just a little work that occurred there. Lot 4 and 5 are the lots closest to Highway 16 and the country store. So just a water line installation went there, and they pressure tested to make sure all the installations are good. And some pre-storm inspections for BMPs were conducted, and there was no issue seen there. At the Murrieta Marketplace, there was also a punch list gone through between the contractors and Coastland Engineering as what was left to be done on that project, and they were just minor items. Nothing that would have held up their request for an installation of their water service meter. Therefore, they've paid their fees for the meter, and so staff went out and installed a 2-inch service meter for the Bel Air. And even though the plans called for a 3-inch meter, they requested a 2-inch meter. And so.
Okay. And we have that. We have that request on file, and just in case.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
So that's good. And so my only concern is, is that adequate fire flow for the sprinkler system, et cetera? And
the fire flow system's different. This is just for water service.
Okay, this is their domestic water service. So they have a separate fire. Okay.
If you're not moving along.
Yep. So at lot 10, Coastland reviewed plans. And I think it was like either a second or third submittal on the plan checks. And so those plans went back to lot 10, to the owner and engineer of that project. Same thing with lot 11, basically. They provided their submittal plan check comments back, and also that project requested a water meter, but we had questions about this one being adequate or not, because their plan drawings called for a 2-inch meter. However, they requested a 1-inch meter, and we just wanted to make sure they're absolutely sure that's what they want, because it's going to be serving a car wash, a Circle K, and a Subway. So it doesn't seem like that would be adequate.
My comment is the same thing, that we have that on their request on record, and if it needs to be changed out again, they would have to cover that the costs.
Yeah, per district code, they would be covering any costs beyond what was originally put in, so. You're correct with that.
I'd just like to remind Paul, because we're virtual and we're on voice, that we want to leave time for any comments or questions on these items from anyone who's on the call. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments? So far, none. All right. Moving on, at the FAA Business Park. So that project was held up a little bit, as the plans needed to have updated signatures and dates, as the project sat idle for a while and those had expired. So Coastland reviewed those and provided them back to the project, and the project has subsequently started back up. Any questions on that?
Just had a question, Paul, on what the status of the construction is. Is it moving forward? Has it been?
It is moving forward. However, there's been, you know, like any project, there's a few delays. Discoveries and issues that we were working through last Thursday and Friday and over the weekend. There's an old irrigation line stub that runs out into that project in the FAA field, which was in the way of where they were doing work. And so they wanted to cut and cap that. I requested that they submit some drawings on that and a submittal of materials, and that I would allow them to cut and cap that stub into the field as long as it didn't interfere with an existing loop on that irrigation system. And that's an old irrigation system that we hope to leverage for recycled water use in the future.
Okay, very good. Any questions on that?
Yes, I have a question. Mm-hmm. The site plans for the business park, I'm curious what's included in there. Is that just, does that include the buildings, or is that just underground utilities, or, you know, what is it?
Yeah, for us, we're concerned with the utilities, water, sewer, drainage, as well as we have the levee system there. So we're concerned with the tie-ins related to that, as well as the fire systems for water supply. But as far as like the building structures themselves, that would be Sacramento County that gets plans and details on those.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Moving on, please. At the Riverview project, so they had first phase map that they had done a while ago, and that was for the park site and some drainage there for the Riverview project that's in the South community. They had that final map approved by Sacramento County, and they consider that their phase one of their project. They're working towards a phase two map of their project, which would include 30 residential lots and grading of the Riverview project site next to Riverview Park in the south. And so they're continuing to work on that. As of last week, that was the word on that. The residents of Murrieta Hills, I don't know if Mark, you would like to speak to that?
Yeah, we're BKS, our legal counsel, district legal counsel, has prepared an analysis of the 670 FSA and has provided that to me. And we are have a meeting scheduled this week to go over those review comments. And that is ahead of a meeting, a kickoff meeting with EPS as far as the finances manager for the 670 FSA. We needed some of the groundwork of legal counsel ahead of the meeting with EPS, just so that we could provide correct information to EPS. So there's meetings scheduled with both entities this week on that.
Okay, Mark, and this is Les Park, just having a question concerning the billing and invoicing for both the legal and EPS. That will be identified as FSA 670 with ultimate reimbursement of those costs in mind, or correct. Some of it.
Correct.
Some of it might be admin. Is that correct?
Correct. Some of it will be admin. You know, if it's part of the district just getting up to speed, that's admin. Mm-hmm. That portion of it that is directly related to the 670 group itself will be attributed to the billing to the group.
Great, thank you. I just wanted to have that clarification. Okay, right. Any other questions on the Residents East Murrieta Hills?
All right, okay, hearing none, I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. So with the district projects, with the water plant effluent pump replacements, those pumps are ready. We're seeking word on shipment of those pumps. Sounds like there's issues with the shipping contractors, so we haven't gotten a ship date as of yet. Mm-hmm. If you could scroll down, Amelia. So with the water rights renewal, no update on that. I still have the task of updating some information that the contractor has given back to me on the recycled water and untreated water fee study. There's no update as well, as I have some task items I need to complete before giving back to them on that. And on the chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite bleach conversion, we've done a lot of work this past month on that project getting ready. That includes pouring a new secondary containment wall, as seen in the photographs in the packet for people on the phone. So we're putting in new chemical tanks, and if those chemical tanks should happen to have a leak on any of the systems, what you want to have in place is a secondary containment so it will hold any of the spillage that occurs as a result of that chemical. And so we've built structures to house that. If you could scroll down, Amelia.
Okay, Paul, I just have a clarification question on that, and that is, do any of those containment walls, or should any of those containment walls have a secondary protective coating?
Yes, and we are actually going to do that. That's already started that. So we've gotten products, epoxy coatings to do that. We've subsequent to me putting this packet together, utility staff has already painted the chemical feed room, and we'll be painting those areas, but weather has to cooperate with us to do that first.
Sure, okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's somewhat noted right there in the packet that we're readying the chemical feed room and the air cement for the epoxy coating. As I've mentioned, they've already done that. If you could scroll down, Amelia. And that we've also been going back and forth with suppliers trying to find where we could get chemical trenches with that aren't tremendously expensive. And so staff found a vendor and we went back and forth with them on plan design and have gotten those ordered. And they should be here in the next week or two. And then we'll continue extending the chemical feed trench that connects up to those new chemical tanks.
And all of this is done offline from the current system and waiting for just a transfer over once the new system is completed and approved. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we'll have, once this system is totally built, we'll be able to use some valving to either feed with our existing chlorine gas system or use the sodium hypochlorite, which is bleach, for disinfection purposes and testing that out.
Great. Thank you.
All right. The West Staff electrical panel replacement is a separate item in this packet.
Okay.
At the Chesbro Aeration Protection Station, we've installed the buoys around there and posted some signage at the boat ramps. Staff's just waiting to get the reservoir completely full, which we're allowed to do after April 15th. We'll start filling it up further. And at that point, they'll finally set the buoys in their final resting places, so they know how much slack they need to have in their lines. On the dam inundation mapping and emergency action plan, that's also a separate project or item in the packet. However, they've submitted back emergency action plans, which I'm under review right now. Been updating some information relating to contacts and staffing. And these will be items that once they're submitted and they've gone back and forth between the Office of Emergency Services and ourselves and the consultant need to be updated annually. And we believe we can do that ourselves. If you could scroll down, please, Amelia. And that's it. Any questions on any of those projects?
Just a clarification, emergency action plans are indeed just that, action plans, and don't have any physical improvements envisioned. And so no environmental documentation or anything like that. This is just an action plan.
Correct. We already have the valving and structures in place to deal with any necessary actions.
Great. Okay. Any questions on that? Otherwise, we can move on to consider approval of item 6B.
Okay.
Which is item A4 on our agenda, Tesco quote. Go ahead.
Yes. So if you could scroll down a little bit, Amelia, right there, that's great. So at this, if you could scroll up just a hair or two. So the 6B sewer lift station services Unit 6 in the North community, as well as the 6A sewer lift station that feeds it. That was installed around 1992 with the Unit 6 development when it was installed. So that pump station that pumps all that sewage through a force main back to the wastewater plant has been in operation for almost 29 years. The PLC there is having issues. Just after time, you'll just see that computers, and that's basically what it is. It's just a CPU system with logic built into it that has been programmed by Tesco originally. That's starting to have some anomalies with the system. And so we'd like to, those anomalies are causing call outs for staff to come out after hours to respond to the system, troubleshoot it, basically reset everything to get it back up in operation. And it's not a reliable system right now. And we don't want to have any sewage backing up or spilling as a result of a failure from that system. Luckily, the call-out systems that are in place do not fully rely on that PLC right now. There's redundant physical backups that work off relays and floats. So they will get called out after hours if there's an issue, and then they can manually pump the station down. But it's not reliable. It needs to be updated. It's due for update. This is not on a capital project list that we had put together. This is something that has arisen as an issue that we need to deal with immediately. And therefore, it's in the packet. And I've requested
that we... Paul, I did note in the 2015 capital reserve study that the location was identified, but was $0. And so that's just something for us to reflect back on. And it had a zero to, I don't know, like 128,000 ultimate, something like that in the future, but it wasn't identified as a particular dollar outlay project for the 2015 reserve study. So of course, now we're in 2020, so.
Yeah, speaking to that, I believe, the intent was that station would get fully upgraded with development that would have occurred in that area. Mm-hmm. And former development plans anticipated that area would have been further developed by now, requiring that station to be upgraded. However, we don't see anything on the current horizon that's going to deal with that. Okay. And we have an immediate need.
And Paul, just for clarification, thumbnail of where the location is, north of the river, et cetera?
Yes, it's right across the pedestrian bridge on the north side of the community. So once you cross that pedestrian bridge, it's that fenced-in area there between holes 2 and 3 on the north.
Right, okay.
All right, and so we reached out to Tesco to... provide us a quote for full replacement and back panel of the components, which is all the wiring and relays and all the appurtenances that go along with the station. And those are together as two separate items, but we're requesting that it all be replaced due to age of the facility there. And they are the only ones we had contacted on that, as they have provided the programming and have the expertise in place for it. Therefore, we're requesting a sole source purchase on this project. And you can see there, they have a very detailed bid provided in the package. Are there any questions on it?
The only questions that I have, this last part, the only questions that I have is, from the standpoint of when, if and when this, that we recommend this go to the board, per the district purchasing code, there's a reference to a particular wording that allows us to go sole source, and just want to make sure that the packet is ready on exactly what citations we need to make at the board, referencing that particular section of code.
Absolutely.
Okay, any other questions on this? It's basically, we're still waiting for $26,248.75. Okay, are we ready? Let's see, and I'm just running through my review. I had no comments on that. It seemed fairly clear, and the PLC is the reason. It's a program logic controller that is specific to that particular site, and so Tesco is the logical selection. So Randy, I'm ready to make a motion to approve this going to the board at the next meeting. Randy, your thoughts?
I'm good with it. It sounds like a no-brainer. It needs to be done. I'm just sitting here thinking about the fact that there aren't any money in the reserves for this, apparently because we thought that someone else was going to do something, and that disturbs me a little bit, but that's a topic for a different conversation.
But a comment to be noted. And like I said, in 2015, the thoughts were slightly different, and they're going to continue to change. And so, our idea, our professed idea of having a 5-year but rolling reserve study for capital replacement reserves is further underscored on an annual basis to update it, but a 5-year rolling capital replacement program. Okay, with those notes, I believe we can say we've recommended that this go to the board at the next full board hearing for approval.
I've noted that, and I will add it to the agenda to be taken up to the board at the April 15th meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. And while it's not roll call, we both heard from Randy and Les Clark that it's unanimous to move forward. So,
and I'll note that in the minutes for the committee meeting, Les.
Right. Okay. Moving on then, are there any public comments on that item? Any questions? Okay, moving on then to the item number A5, approve the West dissolved air flotation.
Yes, so if you could scroll down a little bit, Amelia. So at our wastewater reclamation facility, we have an east and a west side that operate independently of each other for production of tertiary recycled water. Last year, we upgraded a main part of the facility that operated both sides via a PLC system. This is a electrical panel that operates independently to operate the pumps that gets the signals from the other PLC, which this old panel here that operates the West DAF, and DAF is dissolved air flotation. Just really briefly, what dissolved air flotation is microbubbles are introduced into the water at a low spot, and they float algae to the top, which are skimmed off. That just helps in the clarification of the water before it goes to a filter, so the filters don't get overwhelmed with too much solids. And so this electrical panel had a lot of issues with it. It looked like it was very substandard. Electrical wiring had occurred within it. So we put together a bid packet to have that panel completely upgraded and then tied into, within the bid packet, I put together that they would either tie into our existing PLC that was upgraded last year or provide a separate independent small PLC within that panel to operate the pumps and appurtenances that was operating from that panel. So put it out to bid. Oddly enough, we got one bid back that met the district standards for bidding within the time frame, and that was from Telstar. And I've given them a call just to go back over their packet with them, make sure that they're going to stand by their bid. And they said they would. It's good. The other bidder, Prodigy, provided a bid back before the project went out to bid, just via verbal with staff. And unfortunately, they did not meet the standards of the bid packet and weren't included for that review.
And Paul, in the sheet, in your report here, you provided Prodigy's cost sheet as it was attached, but that cost sheet included only materials. It didn't include labor. And so that's important to consider when you're comparing it to Telstar's.
And that's, and I had reached out to Prodigy Electric in regard to bidding this, that, you know, there's going to be a bid packet with detailed information that needed to be laid out in their bid. So that was their choice to the way they responded, unfortunately. So,
yeah, and all I'm saying is if we're using that for reference and we're looking at Prodigy's versus Telstar's, it's just, it's good to point out that Prodigy's early estimate was materials only and not labor. And so that's the reason for the difference. And when you can compare the labor, the materials cost of Prodigy's estimate, early estimate versus Telstar's, they're relatively close. So.
Well, it didn't, Prodigy's didn't list out really any detail of what specifically it included. So that was, that's an issue with it. So,
yeah. Okay.
So, and Tesco did not bid on that project. I got a call back from their bidding agent and they said they were not going to bid on it. So, but there's a lot of detail, a lot of time I spent putting that bid pack together and getting it out to bid. And
what's the packet?
Any questions on any of this?
Just a note, again, this last start, just a note in the background, Paul, you indicated that there had been some previous staff work done and appears to have had some non-standard work done to it. And so just in reference to that, the idea of in the future, better, more detailed record keeping.
Yeah, scroll down, Amelia, if you could.
Is that the picture you're looking for, Paul?
If you could scroll down even further.
Like that?
No, keep scrolling.
Keep going. Here you go.
Yeah, I can't comment to that really less because I don't have record of what work was done. I know my tenure here, I do not approve substandard work as long as I'm aware of it with any electrical wiring. We just went through arc flash training with consultant, which outlines, safety with electrical and standards that need to be met. And, as we become aware of issues, we need to deal with them immediately and not subject staff to any unsafe conditions around our electrical panels and systems. So
yeah,
make sure that all the safety systems are
Right. And the only reason I brought that up is because I know that's happening. And this is just a reference to what had happened in the past. And I wanted to make sure that everyone understood that you have it under control on enhanced record keeping. So.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Is this okay to go forward to the board?
So, yes. Randy, do you want to make any comments?
Nope, I'm good with it.
Okay. So, again, Les Clark, I'm recommending approval for this to go forward to the board for a total amount of $89,996.70. Funding to come from sewer capital replacement reserves. Moving to the board on the next board agenda. That's both Randy and I.
From Randy, you approve?
Correct.
Thank you very much. I'll note that in the minutes, and I'll add this to the next board meeting as well.
All right. Thank you, Amelia. Okay, moving on then to item A6.
So this is a longstanding project that's briefly mentioned in my updates of district projects that are being worked on. Is subsequent to the issues at the Oroville Dam spillway, Department of Safety of Dams, in conjunction with the Office of Emergency Services, required that every dam owner in the state of California update or provide, if they didn't already have them, inundation mapping as a result of dam failures. And as a result of putting those together, a separate project was to put together emergency action plans. And so the inundation mapping has been completed and submitted. The emergency action plans, first round, were provided to the Office of Emergency Services. As per the original declaration that was set forth, it was saying it's just you're supposed to submit them. They either approve them or don't, and you move forward. And now they've put together basically a long back and forth process between Office of Emergency Services and DSOD, and require that these EAPs, emergency action plans, get updated annually. And so since there's a lot more back and forth required, there's more staffing time required by our consultant that was originally awarded the project to do this. We're just requesting that we have monies in place to be able to cover their additional time spent for the back and forth with the Office of Emergency Services. And that's what's in the packet presented here.
Okay. Any public comments, first of all? Any board member comments, committee member comments? Randy?
Nope. I understand it, and looks like something we need to do.
Okay. My only comment is I'm highlighting what Paul just identified, and that is changes due to additional communications being required by OES, something that was unforeseen. We can't foresee them changing their mind and increasing their communication requirements and compliance requirements. And so the only question I do have is, can you explain just a little bit about the separation of the funding from one quarter sewer and three quarters water replacement reserves?
Yes, one of the dams is withholding or holding back water at the wastewater facility.
Right.
And the one quarter, and the others are for the water facilities.
Yes. Okay. I just want to make sure that was on the record there, and maybe that's something that if this goes to the board, we could add that clarification so it's
okay
available. Okay. With that, Les Clark, I would also approve this goes forward to the board next board meeting. an amount of $12,573. And this is an estimated amount, but it's pretty right down to the dollar from Domenichelli and Associates for additional services. So I think that's approved and we're ready to go, Amelia. All right.
Thank you. I'll move that to the next meeting and I'll note this in the committee minutes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Moving on to item A7. Oh, wait a minute.
That's right, A7, the RMA pedestrian
bridge. RMA pedestrian bridge. Yes, partial, yes.
So this is an ongoing project. It is not a super high priority right now, given everything else we're working on. But we, you know, this is about the parcel underneath the wooden pedestrian bridge and the proposal to convey that to the RMA as it was originally intended. There is a news article from the time with a director of the CSD quoted at the time saying, we'll sort it out later. This is to expedite the project. So it was very clear even back then that the intent was to convey this back to the RMA, given the difficulties at the time there was between the original OE3 interests and the RMA having difficulty coming to an agreement as to who would own that parcel. So we continue to work on this. Lori, if you could provide some feedback as to where we are as far as the surveying, et cetera.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, you're correct. I've received a couple of proposals for it. I honestly, it's kind of slipped maybe further to the bottom of my list, a few of the other things. So I'll pick it back up. Hopefully next month I'll have a more solid update, but it's in progress as you state.
All right.
Okay. Just a question again, as the last Clark, I have a question. Is RMA, putting up any resistance to this or just asking questions or what, Mark?
Well, I think we need to, once we have it outlined as far as exactly what we're, you know, proposing as far as the deeding it over to the RMA, there has been, I would say, a statement of, well, prove to us that it should come back to us. But that's just very informal. I don't want to blow it into more than what it is. Mm-hmm. But they would like, you know, proof that that's the case. I can tell you there's individuals at RMA right now that were involved in, you know, and working for RMA at the time when that bridge was put in place. So I believe they are aware of what the origins of the conveyance of the parcel was and the logic behind it at the time. And like I said, the research we've done shows that, you know, there was that discussion. PTF, is that who it is? The
Pension Trust Fund?
Yeah, Pension Trust Fund. In their difficulty with the RMA is what caused the CSD to step in and basically accept that parcel for the time being, just so that the bridge could be constructed. And so there's a matter of the appropriateness of the CSD holding that parcel long on an ongoing basis, given that it was intended to be conveyed back to the RMA at some point. Mm-hmm. Or to the RMA at some point.
Yeah, and then again, you know, just the overlying consideration of the use of the facility that has no utilities crossing it and has nothing to do with the community services district. It's totally Rancho Murrieta Association benefit for access.
Correct.
Okay, that's just an update item, still moving forward. Any questions, comments, public? Okay, directors, any questions, comments? No further staff comments, moving on to item A8, groundwater sustainability.
So one of the items that the board has heard quite a bit of the last number of months is on the proposal by Slough House Resource Conservation District to serve as the groundwater sustainability agency over the RMCSD district. And the board has heard concerns that I've had as someone who's participated on the board of SCGA, the Sacramento Central Groundwater Authority, a preference for the district to remain with the Sacramento Central Groundwater Authority. A lot of it is there's more transparency. The CSD sits on the board, has at least a board seat on the SCGA versus SLU House, where there is no representation on the SLU House Resource Conservation District. Also find there's just a lot more transparency as far as costs and how the SCGA operates versus the SLU House Resource Conservation District. I guess more certainty. So we have been involved, and I started at the beginning of this year participating in the MOU negotiations, not so much as a voting member, but just as providing feedback to the SCGA and SLU House Resource Conservation District as to the preference of the RMCSD. Last week, I participated in another MOU negotiation and have attended the last two SLU House Resource Conservation District board meetings. In both those meetings, I requested very clearly that if SLU House Resource Conservation District felt there were significant benefits to both parties of Rancho Murrieta moving forward with SLU House Resource Conservation District as its GSA, that I had requested that SLU House Resource Conservation District provide a letter detailing that argument.
Mm-hmm.
We have received nothing as to date. In the meeting held last week, Jay Schneider, one of the board members, introduced a whole new proposal, which was to separate out the ag portion of the RMCSD district from the SCGA component and have SLU House Resource Conservation District oversee that as part of the GSA. I was asked to, if we'd be open to that concept. And my response was, well, this is a brand new proposal. I don't even have a map of where they're proposing to draw that line, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we're in communications right now with an individual from the Water Forum who's helping with the MOU negotiations. Received a call from Herb, I'm trying to recall his last name, on the SLU House Resource Conservation District Board about what they're proposing as far as an outline. My concerns about splitting the CSD district between SLU House and SCGA just within the South American Basin is that it would mean that we'd probably have three reporting requirements.
Right.
For groundwater. Mm-hmm. One would be the South American Basin for SCGA, South American Basin for SLU House, and then the Cosumnes Basin, which we also sit in about a third of the southern third of the district. And so there would have to be one heck of a good justification, I believe. I can tell you that the parties that were involved as part of the MOU negotiation last week, the other parties were not in support of splitting the district between two GSAs. Mm-hmm. And so unless something significant occurs, I would continue to recommend that the CSD remain whole under the SCGA as its groundwater sustainability agency. So that's just an update. I'll have this update in the general manager's update for the board meeting.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate that diligence in this very complicated set of alternative proposals, but it's my understanding, my outlook that we don't want to over complicate our future administrative issues with more than one reporting agency. So one, two, or three, expending it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Correct. And there's another factor that I didn't mention yet. And that is, depending on where they would draw the line of where SLU House Resource Conservation District would assume the GSA responsibilities, if the well site, the best well site that was identified for the district use, even though we've put that on hold for now, but in the future, if that well site sits within those agricultural areas, then I believe that you know, since we don't have a seat on the Slough House Resource Conservation District, that's something we'd have to consider, is what the impact of that would be, is if that well site fell within that area that they would be proposing.
Right. And then also the issue of the future of the seat at the SCGA, rather than the SCGA board is also a question, is it not?
At this point, I think the Slough House has backed off of that.
Okay. All right. All right. That seemed to be one of the driving issues at one point in time. So it's right. No longer, that's fine. All right, Mark, thank you very much. Any public questions, comments on that particular item? Any director comments? I have none. Les Clark? Randy? Okay.
Nothing. I'm
okay.
Good.
Then that will go to the as a report for the next board meeting. Moving on then to Murrieta Marketplace, item number A9.
So Lori, I'm gonna let you introduce this.
Perfect. So item A9 is the utility and water easements for Murrieta Marketplace. There's two easements. One is a roughly 45 foot easement that goes along the frontage lots, and the other one is a 15 foot water line easement that goes along the front of the Raley's or Bel Air Shopping Center. There's a picture of it. I think it's in the second page of the packet. Kind of shows you where both.
And easements. Both of those are Cosumnes irrigation easements.
These will be district.
Combined utilities. District, okay.
And these utilities are already installed. This was already approved as part of the entitlements. So this is really just finishing up what was already coordinated a long time ago.
Just and Lori, are they here circled in red?
So right now the utilities are installed, but the easements are not. So this will basically allow these easements to be recorded and these utilities to become public utilities, which will be, you know, owned and operated by the district.
It's the entire yellow area, how I outlined.
Yeah, the entire yellow area. Sorry. Thank you, Paul. Mm-hmm. So in one case, it's just a water easement. And the other case, it's water, recycled water, storm drain, and sewer.
Okay, and the language highlighted or in the middle, you know, the district will not restore or replace, et cetera, et cetera.
So that is something that we added because, as you can tell, these easements bisect a private shopping center, and the district standard language didn't really address that. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want the district to have to be responsible to have to repair, you know, a landscape island or fancy pavement or fill in the blank, whatever else, because that's not really up to the district.
Mm-hmm.
The shopping center people have, the developer has chosen to put these utilities where they've chosen to put them, and we're okay with that as long as we don't have to, you know, fix their special improvements. You know, we'll do what we need to do to keep it safe, but, you mm-hmm. know, and the other language also, because the water line is right in front of the Raley's, right in the middle of their drive aisle, if you ever need to go in there and repair that line, you know, you might end up closing down drive aisle in front of the mm-hmm. grocery store, which can be problematic. So there's also language there addressing that concern as well. You know, that way the district won't get in trouble for, you know, having to do what's necessary work and affecting, you know, commercial owner. And we will, of course, be reasonable, right? Sometimes you have to go in there and do that.
Okay, my questions are, sure. Do these easements cross separately owned parcels within the development.
This is all one parcel. There will be separate easements on each of the individual lots, so lots 4 and 5. As you can tell, like the 15-foot easement has those little bump outs that that cover the fire hydrant and all the little appurtenances, backflow preventers. There will be similar easements necessary on lots 4 and 5, lots 10, lots 11. Those will all be done separately because they are separate owners.
Okay, and then my next question is there a reason that we delay easement acquisition until after completion of the facilities?
Well, you can do it either way. I think the argument for doing it after completion is that you're assured that your easement is over your utility line and that you're able to adjust for any changes during construction.
Yes, and that's the reason I want it stated. So that's perfect. Okay.
Sorry, I can't help with that yet.
Sorry about that. Okay, so I mean, you know, the logic is sound in my mind that doing it afterwards in case there's any changes is appropriate, but we want to make sure that we have each individual lot or parcel owner responsible for their portion of the easement and the language that's associated with it, the restrictive language that's associated with it. So that's something for this particular item. It's for this current is one parcel and one owner at this point in time. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Those were my questions, comments. Are there any public comments associated with this particular item? Randy, do you have any questions, comments?
I do not.
Okay, just as long as we make sure that all the final legal docs have this restrictive language in it, protecting the district from having to replace any costly decorative items, I'm ready to recommend it going towards to the board.
Okay.
Agreed.
Thank you, Les.
All right, thank you.
I will put this on the agenda with the resolution for the board for April 15th.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Amelia. Any other staff comments? Moving on then to item A10.
Must be this.
It's the
monument sign.
Monument signs.
Yes, when was that? It was March 23rd or March 13th, I think it was. A while back, I received a call from Mr. Sullivan identifying an issue out at the Murrieta Marketplace. This is Mark Martin, by the way. An issue where the replacement of monument signs. So monument signs are those wide rectangular type signs that you see at shopping centers, and a proposal to place a monument sign into the CIA, the Kasunis Irrigation Association ditch, of which there's 2/3 ownership essentially by those out at the ranches, and then 1/3 ownership and maintenance responsibility by the district. And so the district does have an interest in issues where there's infrastructure that may impact access to or the ability to maintain facilities within the easement. And so Mr. Sullivan had mentioned that they would share plans on that and the concerns or the issues that they were encountering with us on March 16th, which was at the time a scheduled meeting, a developer's meeting, basically a monthly update that we do. The developer asked to cancel or did not attend that meeting, so we did not hold that meeting. We were expecting to receive those plans and have that discussion at that meeting. Subsequent to that, as Paul mentioned earlier in his update, one of our staff went out and noticed that they had already appeared to start construction. And so, and that's without us having the benefit of any plans and being able to provide feedback. So as Paul mentioned already, I sent a communication to Cassunas River Land and others that are involved that they were acting or they were proceeding at risk, and that any impacts, if they were to place those signs, of any additional costs or impacts to the district for maintenance of the facilities underneath those pylon signs would have to be accepted by 100% by those two-thirds owner interests that were advocating this project and moving forward without the district. Since that time, the district did receive plans and Coastland Engineering on behalf of the district. We requested plans, they reviewed the plans, and there was a discussion as to how the CRL or the developer was proposing to proceed. And so, Lori, I'll let you take it from there.
Okay, thank you, Mark. So basically, exactly as Mark did, John Sullivan and Dane actually had a conversation on March 27th. On March 27th, we reviewed the submitted package, and we basically provided a comment letter to the district, to the developer, outlining the district's concerns with the sign placement and easement encroachment. Sign in particular, a monument sign B, which there's an exhibit that shows there's three monument signs for this project. Monument sign B was entirely in the CIA ditch easement, with the sign almost entirely on top of that 42-inch existing CIA irrigation line.
Mm-hmm.
And then monument sign A, although just placed just outside the easement, the footing was at the very edge of the easement and was only 8 feet away of a 42-inch line. So, you know, if we had been given the opportunity, we would have recommended maybe a footing change or shifting that sign back as far as they reasonably could to minimize any impacts to the line, because, you know, it's close enough that it could still, you know, potentially cause issues if you were to, you know, need to maintain that irrigation line. And would be in the best interest of the developer as well, because, you know, nobody wants to mess with that, with those big signs. They don't have to. So anyway, so we put that comment letter together and then followed up with a phone call with John Sullivan. And this is what it was. They said that they will coordinate with the CIA to prepare and sign an agreement that would absolve the CIA of any future maintenance issues resulting from the construction of the monument sign. So John's going to work with them to do that. And they want to leave monument A, the one that's right on the edge of the easement, exactly where it is, because it does not encroach. And the one that does encroach, he won't move it out of the easement, but he'll move it back a few feet. I think he said 4 feet back. So that's the compromise. The whole idea there being that if the district doesn't have to maintain or deal with that 42-inch line, then, you know, they'll take the responsibility and liability of having those signs in that location. So he did generally mention that there is an existing underground, I'm not exactly sure what it is, some kind of conduit or something that's really, really deep in that location, 18 to 20 feet deep. Nothing like this is showing up on the topo that we have. It's not on the existing plans. We're not exactly sure, you know, what John is talking about there. So we've asked for additional information. As of this morning, I have not received anything regarding that. I bring it up because in John's mind, if they ever had to maintain that really deep utility, then the shallower 42-inch utility is less important. But anyway,
again, that's only within the current CID easement.
Correct. Yes.
If it goes outside of that easement, then that doesn't have anything to do with this discussion.
Correct. And I don't even know if that's real. I've not seen plans or anything for that. That's just something that John mentioned. But I included in my letter because if that's true, it's relevant to this conversation. Mm-hmm. And then so what we did subsequent to that conversation is we updated the original comment letter that we did after talking with Mark, that basically said if he was willing to sign an agreement and get the CIA to sign an agreement, then the district would be okay with him putting the signs where he's already building them. And that's where it left last Friday.
Okay.
Does that summarize the conversation enough for you, Mark? Did I?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, my questions were from the standpoint of the depth of the footing for the signs. We've reviewed that, and I mean, you know, if the sign were to be impacted by a vehicle or have wind shear issues, you know, that footing, and I understand the agreement to assume all liability is appropriate, but if that 42 inches is full of water and something happened, there could be ancillary impacts if any damage to one of those signs caused damage to the line. And so we want to make sure that is all covered as well, ancillary damage.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Les. And, you know, we've not received any kind of letter, you know, suitable for our review. Mm-hmm. So we will need to look at the language when we receive it and ensure that, you know, that the district is protected. Mm-hmm. and probably right. Modify the language as necessary.
But also just some preliminary thoughts on the potential for such damage. You know, we'll help the district to make a decision if the footings of the signs are so shallow that it's you know, should damage occur to the signs, it gives us an idea and understanding of what the potential is for damage, any ancillary damage to the 42 inch. And
I 100% agree. We actually did not receive sign footing design or details. That was one of the things we did ask for in our original March 26th comment letter.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that would be helpful. I think they did say that they were about 4 feet deep. And so Dane had provided some preliminary discussion on that, but mm-hmm. we absolutely need to have a copy of that so that we can provide better input on that topic.
And thank you very much. And that's my point. We need the information. We need to at least consider the potential for so that we understand what the potential might be for damage. And you know, from the standpoint of liability, that's one thing. From the standpoint of reaction in a situation that might occur in the future, we also want to be aware of what the potential is. So,
agree.
Okay.
And this is Paul, just real quick, in a comment I had earlier when this was being discussed too, is that if and when they provide detailed as-built or plans for the monument signs, that they provide them as as-built to the district along with where any electrical is routed to those signs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that was also in the comment letter that we had sent to them originally, was requesting that as well.
Okay. Any other staff comments on this item? Public comments. Any public comments on this item? Hearing none. Director Jenko, do you have any questions, comments?
Just so I understand, Lori, you recommended that they use CIDH piles. They did not. They used a spread foundation
footings.
I don't know what they use. They have not provided us foundation footings. We recommended piles because generally those are better for, you know, when you're constructing near utility. But we do not know what foundation they use because they didn't provide any plan.
But these are built, and so what we're asking for is as built, and that will show.
Correct. Correct.
That will show what type of footing it is and what the bottom of footing elevations are versus the pipe and so on. And okay.
Yeah. And then again, also, and that's the footings. It's very important to understand what those are. And if we had to ultimately request shear couplings for the signs to reduce the underground any underground impacts, that might be something we would consider as well. Is that correct?
Well, I think the key here is getting on record. You sent them a letter recommending certain foundations. They obviously didn't follow that. We're going to find out what it is they did send. And then I think that another letter back to them, just getting on record saying that these were our recommendations, you didn't follow them. And we understand that you're taking full responsibility for it in some type of an MOU, but this is what we wanted to have happen, and this is what you did.
Okay, thank you, Randy. And again, this is Les Clark, and I agree with that all from the standpoint of thinking about the future liability. And I just want to make sure that all parties involved have thought not only about the future liability, but the potential for reducing any ancillary impacts to the CID facilities physically, irrespective of the liability or, you know, in deference to the liability, just making sure that the facilities going forward are as safe as is conceivable. So even if we have to include a potential recommendation for shear couplings on the signs, that might be something we'd like to at least consider.
Yeah, and Les, as you know, but I'm going to state for everybody else, they would have had to go through a building department structural approvals to construct these signs and get permits for them. So I'm assuming, and maybe that's a jump, that somebody at Sac County has looked at these and they're structurally sound. Whether or not it takes into account the utilities, you know, is perhaps a separate issue, but the signs themselves, right, you know, should have been designed, right, and stamped by a structural engineer.
And I appreciate that. Sometimes our assumptions do not match reality from the standpoint of what other agencies are doing. And so having a record of that, having our thumb or our fingertip on a record of that, or a copy of that in our files might not be a bad thing.
Agreed.
Okay, those are my comments. Any other closing comments on this report back? Okay, then moving on to, that closes out item A10. Moving on to director comments. Randy, well, first of all, let's open that up to any other staff comments first. Any other staff comments on improvements committee items?
None.
Okay, then, Director, Randy, do you have any comments?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, and so am I. And so there's Les Clark. I have no comments as well, and that's for the record. And so we're ready for adjournment. I will make a motion to adjourn the Improvements Committee for April 7th.
Agreed.
Okay. Then we stand adjourned. And thank you very much for participating. And we're all learning about the online conduct of a meeting. And I think it's going well. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good day.